him, expose him, and he laughed in my face, told me to go ahead, that he had something on my parents that would send them to the chair. I could tell he meant it. I'd been around him long enough to know he had a brutal streak. Buck, he wasn't one for idle threats. So I kept my mouth shut all these years. Miner followed Barbara's gaze to her mother. Tears were streaming down the old woman's cheeks. "Now she cries," Barbara said. "Think she understands what you're saying? Who cares? She and my father let Buck molest me for years just to save their skins. And why have you been so protective of her? Who knows? Misplaced loyalty? It won't change anything. Claire will still be dead. She'll still be crazy. My life will still be shit. And Buck Pollard will still walk free."
Jack stepped forward. "Did Rosa Ramos ever clean Buck Pollard's house?" Barbara turned slowly in her chair. She glared at Jack.
"What did you say?"
"Did Rosa ever clean Buck's house?"
"Once."
"When?"
2 days before she died. He called me that afternoon, asked me who cleaned his house, told me she did such a good job he wanted to give her a little something extra. He killed them, didn't he?"
Jack nodded. "He had them killed."
"Bastard."
She stared out the window.
"I wonder what she saw. I cleaned his house for years and never found a thing. Lord knows I looked."
"Do you know of any other girls Buck might have?"
Miner couldn't say it. She shrugged.
"No, but I'm sure he did."
"Why?" Miner asked. She looked at Miner with pity.
"He liked it too much."
Miner stood and walked to the window. An old man was asleep on a courtyard bench, his walker in front of him. Miner's ears roared, making Jack and Barbara's conversation indistinct, white noise.
"I'm sure he did."
The words bounced around his head. Was Buck molesting local girls now? The thought of that old man touching little girls made Miner's stomach lurch, his fists ball up, and his face burn with rage. "Miner?" Miner jumped when he felt the touch on his shoulder. It took a moment for Miner to focus in on Jack, to realize who he was, what they were doing there.
"Yeah. Let's go."
He squeezed Barbara's shoulder.
"I'll talk to you soon, okay?"
"Sure, Miner."
Her voice was dead. It broke his heart. 4. Miner leaned across Jack and opened the glove compartment. He removed a bulging manila envelope, folded in thirds, and tossed it on Jack's lap.
"Here."
Jack opened the envelope and went completely still. "What's this?"
"My monthly payment from Buck."
"For what?"
"Doing nothing. Turning a blind eye. Being a coward. Take your pick."
Miner drummed his fingers on the steering wheel.
"He's been paying me off and on for about 10 years now. Just enough to help out with the medical bills, but not enough to draw a lot of attention. No banks, he always said."
"Any idea how much he's paid you over the years?"
$20,000, give or take a few hundred."
Jack folded the envelope and put it in his coat pocket.
"He didn't know where to start, so he started with Barbara. Somehow he knew it was all connected."
"You and Barbara were a couple?"
"Yeah, you could call it that. I'd had a crush on her for years. She was such a pretty little girl. I used to walk through the woods to her house and peek inside."
"You were a peeping Tom?"
"I was 10, 11. I was trying to get up the courage to talk to her, to knock on the door to see if she wanted to play. I never did. Of course, she always knew I liked her. When she got older and bolder, she pursued me. Caught me pretty quick.
What happened?
She had a cruel streak in her I couldn't abide. Barbara told me later she threatened to rip off the head of Ellie's Raggedy Ann doll if she told anyone about seeing us. I mean, who says that to a child? It was years later after she'd been to jail and had come back to Stillwater. Buck was helping her get her business started. He hired her to clean his house, convinced Earl to give her the city hall job. When I made some comment about Buck always liking Barbara, I said it innocently. I remembered seeing him coming and going late at night from the Dodsworths. One night I saw her sitting on his lap. He had his back to the window, so I couldn't see what was going on. But I was a kid. It never occurred to me that might be going on.
Miner looked at Jack.
He was a policeman.
The radio crackled to life. Jack turned it off. Whatever it was could wait a few minutes.
Buck obviously thought I knew more than I did. Though he never came right out and said anything, never owned up to anything. But he felt threatened, for sure. Which got me thinking. When he started giving me money for Teresa, I really started thinking.
Once you took the money, he had something on you.
Yep.
You never wondered if he was still molesting little girls? It never occurred to you to tell someone, to look into it?
I ain't proud of it, and I ain't gonna make excuses for it except to say that for every wrong thing Buck does, he does three good things.
Then why tell me now?
'Cause before, I just suspected it. Now I know.
Miner started the car.
You'll have my resignation on your desk by the end of the day.
Jack reached out and stopped Miner from putting the car in drive.
No, I won't.
Miner's hand slipped off the drive handle.
You should arrest me for what I've told you.
You're right. I should. And one day I might. But right now we have three officers on the force and a population that's calling in every minor convenience. You'll work the night shift and double shifts until I can hire a couple of people. Then I'll figure out what to do with you. Until then, what you have told me doesn't leave this car. Understand?
Yeah.
He put the car in reverse and backed out. Jack turned on the radio.
God damn it, Miner, you got your radio turned off.
Miner picked up the handset.
Go on, Violet. What's the problem now?
Violet's voice trembled through the line.
Is the chief with you?
Yeah, he's sitting right here.
Get back here quick. Mike Freeman's hanged himself in the cell.
5.
State your name and address.
Michael Wayne Freeman, 2750 Elm Street, Stillwater, Texas.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say or do may be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to consult an attorney before speaking to the police and to have an attorney present during questioning now or in the future. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you before any questioning, if you wish. If you decide to answer any questions now without an attorney present, you will still have the right to stop answering at any time until you talk to an attorney. Knowing and understanding your rights as I have explained them to you, are you willing to answer my questions without an attorney present?
Yes.
Tell me, in your own words, what happened on Thursday morning, September 6.
About Wednesday midnight, or is it Thursday midnight? I can never keep that straight. I went to Rosa and Gilberto's trailer house. I walked through the fields between my neighborhood and the trailer park. They're not too far from each other, did you know that?
I didn't.
It's about a half-mile walk. I didn't see any cars on the roads or people. The trailer park was mostly dark. A couple of dogs barked, but they lost interest pretty quick. Ramos's trailer was dark, so I went up to the back door. I was going to pick the lock, but it was open. I stood in the main room, letting my eyes get adjusted to the light. That's when I heard them down the hall. I started to leave, and I realized they were fucking. I pulled my gun out, walked down the hall, and shot them. Gilberto, then Rosa. It was over in 2 seconds. I put the gun in her hand and left.
Why did you kill them?
Drugs.
What?
Drugs.
What do you mean, drugs?
Gilberto was my supplier.
Supplier for what?
HGH, steroids, from Mexico. But he cut me off. Started selling himself.
Gilberto Ramos was selling steroids?
Yes.
So you killed him?
Yeah.
Why not just find another supplier?
If you let one Mexican get away with betraying you, they'll all think you're weak.
So it was a show of force to the other drug dealers?
Yes.
We didn't find any steroids or drugs at the scene.
I took them with me. Sold them.
This isn't the story you told me off camera.
You mean before you read me my Miranda rights?
Did someone put you up to killing the Ramoses?
No.
You did it all on your own?
Yes.
You aren't protecting anyone?
I want a lawyer now.
The screen turned blue. Jack stopped the video camera and turned the TV off. But the rest of his conversation with Freeman played in his mind.
You're going to force me to bring Seth into this, aren't you?
Freeman had leaned back in his chair. His hands were cuffed in front of him.
You don't have a print.
You willing to take that chance?
You might have mine, though I doubt it. You definitely don't have Seth's. I had a lot of time to think last night, and I know without a doubt I never cleaned that gun with Seth around.
Jack had clenched his jaw. Freeman was right. There was no print.
Where'd you go last night anyway?
Freeman had asked.
I was sure you said not to get too comfortable. So I waited and waited. You never showed. Gave me plenty of time to think. Thanks for that.
Jack had meant to drive straight home, find the camera, and return. Then he'd seen the light on in Ellie's loft, and the urge to see her had overcome his professional logic. He'd just stopped for a minute, apologized for not calling or stopping by the store on her first day of business. A few minutes turned into 3 hours. 3 wonderful hours, during which he was able to forget everything else going on in his life. Freeman's confession, Miner's betrayal, the divorce, his brother's inopportune arrival, his strained relationship with Ethan. 3 hours that cost him his chance to nail Buck Pollard.
I might not have Seth's print, Jack had said, but people will believe the rumor I start about you two easy enough. Sure, some won't, but others will wonder. Everything you've done for him, every time you've been seen in public together, no matter how innocent, all of it will be remembered differently.
Just like people will believe when I tell them about you covering for your brother,
Freeman had replied.
Seems you're more like Buck Pollard than you want to admit.
Ann Newberry's voice broke through his memories.
What a load of shit.
It took a moment for Jack to realize she was talking about Freeman's confession and not his comparison to Buck Pollard.
Yep.
Jack sat on the corner of his desk and told her about his initial interview with Freeman, leaving out Seth Kendrick's name and Freeman's threat to him. Ann stood in front of the TV, her arms crossed over her chest. Freeman figured out I hadn't Mirandized him. Nothing he told me at his house could be used. So he changed his story.
To protect Pollard?
I don't think so, Jack said.
He protected his lover.
Jack almost choked on the word. Ann noticed.
I didn't know you were a homophobe, McBride.
I'm not. I just have a hard time with the idea of an adult in a sexual relationship with a high schooler. It's wrong, even if it is consensual. Not to mention the fact he was a police officer in a position of power. He abused a trust.
And Ethan is just a few years younger.
Yes, goddammit.
Jack stood and walked around the room. He felt dirty, on edge. In less than 24 hours, Jack had learned about 3 adults taking advantage of innocent children and teenagers. The situations were all unique.
the participants, victims of varying degrees, some not considering themselves victims at all. The idea that Ethan could be in any one of these situations made Jack feel powerless, untethered, made him want to punch a hole in the wall or take an axe to Buck-fucking Pollard's ancient desk. He kicked his desk chair and sent it spinning into the back wall. The windows rattled with the impact. Anne sat down. She calmly crossed her legs and clasped her hands together on her knee. If she hadn't been wearing an unflattering tan sheriff's uniform, she would have looked like a maddeningly unflappable psychologist. She didn't say a word, merely waited, an expert on the efficiency of silence. Jack took a deep breath and returned to his perch on the corner of his desk.
"Why did he kill himself?" Anne asked.
"I don't know," Jack lied. The threat he had hurled at Freeman as he locked him in the cell that morning rang in his ears. "If you think Buck Pollard is going to protect you in Huntsville, you're a bigger idiot than I thought." He shook the memory from his head. "I've got ads out for officers, but hiring is going to take time. I need help."
"My men will be happy with the overtime."
"I'm sure Earl will be thrilled with it, too," Jack replied, thinking of the city manager's edict just a week ago about a hiring freeze. That was before Jack got beat up and lost a squad car, and an officer strangled himself with a twisted T-shirt in the basement holding cell. Still, Jack was sure this would all be held against him, as it should have been. "I want to get a warrant for Buck Pollard's house," Jack said. Anne raised her eyebrows.
"Based on what? A non-Mirandized interrogation of a suspect no one but you witnessed? There's not a judge in Texas who would sign that."
"That's not the basis for it, though maybe we'll find something to tie him to the Ramos murders."
"What's the basis?" Anne asked slowly.
He told her about Miner's investigation and Barbara's revelation. He didn't tell her about Miner's confession in the squad car. That would come out in due time, he had no doubt. But right now, it was more important to keep Miner around and for Anne to trust Miner. He suspected they would all be working closely together.
"Well, I'll be damned," Anne said.
She stared thoughtfully at the floor. "You wouldn't expect that of Buck Pollard?"
"What? Oh."
She blew air between her lips.
"I'd expect anything of Pollard. No, I didn't know Miner was that good of an investigator."
"He doesn't look the part, does he?"
"No."
"I had my own reservations about Miner," Jack said. "Still do," he thought. "But he's proven himself to me."
"Huh. So what's your plan? Because I know you have one. Statute of limitations is long past on Barbara's abuse. No way we can get a warrant on that."
"No. But we can get a warrant if he implicates himself."
"How will you get him to do that?"
"I won't. Miner will."
"You really do trust him?"
"Trust is a strong word. Let's just say I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. For now."
"When are we doing this?"
"As soon as possible."
"Miner know?"
"Not yet." Anne stood and smiled.
"Let me make a few calls. Get some deputies over here. Then we'll see how good an actor Miner Jessen is."
Jack closed the door behind her. He walked around his desk and stood in front of the windows. The river sparkled in the midday sun. Soon, shadows from the trees on the opposite bank would creep across the water. Water bugs would skim the shaded surface, tantalizing the fish. A flash of metal broke through the trees behind his house. Jack looked closely and saw Ethan and Eddie standing next to the Harley. Eddie handed Ethan a helmet and straddled the bike. Jack wasn't worried. As personally irresponsible as Eddie was, Jack trusted him with Ethan. They were probably going to get lunch. Jealousy shot through him hard and fast. He turned from the window and stared into the middle distance. What was wrong with him? First, the burst of anger in front of Anne, now this jealousy. All day, in fact, his emotions had been bubbling near the surface, disgust and despair at Barbara's story, disappointment at Miner's confession and contempt for his cowardly actions throughout the years, regret at the loss of Freeman and a good dose of fear at his own culpability. He should have realized Freeman was a suicide risk. Instead, he threw a veiled threat in his face and left him in the cell with a volunteer fireman to check on him occasionally. Not that he had much choice, as understaffed as they were. He closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose. Christ, what a shitty day. And it had started so well. He sat heavily in his chair and thought of Ellie. Had it really only been 7 hours since he left her bed? God, it felt like a lifetime. If he thought hard enough, he could conjure up the happiness of those hours with her. The feel of her breasts beneath his hands, the way their bodies fit together, the throaty groan she made when she came, the intensity in her eyes and the way they never left his, the way she challenged him to look away, the laughter. He had never laughed before when making love. It had never struck him as something to laugh at, to make light of. Sex was serious business. Do this, do that, move here, hope she's in the mood to blow you, make sure she comes. It was fun in the way a good workout was fun. Sometimes you were into it and were satisfied at the end. Sometimes it was a chore, but you felt better when it was done. He couldn't imagine feeling that way about being with Ellie. Jack sighed. He wished he had never left her apartment. Or maybe that it hadn't happened at all. No, not that. Never that. But now their first time was tied to Claire Dodsworth's affinity for teenage boys, Buck Pollard grooming little girls for molestation, Mike Freeman giving his life to protect Seth Kendrick's secret, Miner's betrayal, his own stupid mistakes. He hated them all. The town, Jane Maxwell for luring him here, his wife for leaving and setting him on this path. Damn it! He kicked the middle desk drawer, the one that wouldn't open or close all the way. It popped out and he stood and kicked it again, kept kicking it until it splintered and the face fell off. Jack grabbed the broken drawer and ripped it out, spilling pens, pencils, and paperclips all over the floor. He was holding the broken drawer in his hand, chest heaving, hair flopped over his forehead, when Miner barged into the room, a panicked expression on his face. What the hell? Everything all right, Chief? Jack dropped the drawer on the floor. He smoothed his hair back from his forehead. I'm fine, Miner. I'm glad you're here. I need you to call Buck Pollard.
What for?
You're going to get him to implicate himself.
For what?
Molesting girls, putting a hit on two law-abiding Mexicans, extortion, murder, take your fucking pick. I don't give a goddamn what you think. You're an officer of the law, and you're going to do whatever it takes to make sure Buck Pollard pays for what he's done.
6.
Buck, it's Miner.
Hey, Miner.
You make it down to Galveston all right?
I did.
Catch anything today?
Haven't gone out yet. About to. You just caught me. Did you need something, or you just called to check on me?
You don't need checking on.
You're right about that.
Now, I called to tell you it's all taken care of.
What's that?
That skeleton. Case is closed, just like you wanted.
There was a long pause. Miner looked across the seat at Jack, glanced in the rearview mirror at Ann Newberry. She was glaring at him. Why did she hate Miner so much?
Buck, you there?
Where are you?
In the car. I got you on speakerphone.
Why?
So I have my hands free. Why else? You told us to use speakerphone as much as we can.
So I did.
There was another pause.
You alone?
Miner laughed, tried to lace as much bitterness in it as possible.
Who the hell else would be with me? Ain't nobody left on the force, hardly. Another week or two, and McBride will be the only one left.
Why, you gonna fire you?
Nah, he likes me. Thinks I like him. Pretty gullible for a fancy fed. Chances are greater he'll get me killed somehow.
Miner felt the irritation coming off Jack in waves, and Newberry was smirking in the back seat.
It's a damn shame about Freeman. He was a good officer.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah, I'll be back for the funeral.
Not that. Freeman made some pretty serious accusations before he died.
Is that right?
Said you told him to kill them Mexicans.
Buck laughed.
Did McBride believe it?
Yeah, he did. I think he'll believe anything bad said about you.
Jane Maxwell's put that bug in his ear.
Word is, she's dying, you know.
There was a pause.
Is she?
She's older than Methuselah. Shouldn't be much of a surprise.
Buck laughed.
Honestly, I thought she'd live forever. Outlive me for sure, just out of spite.
Why does she hate you?
Oh, we go way back, Jane and I. We both got in our punches, though I guess she got the last one.
You still think she framed you up?
Well, I sure as hell didn't open the Cayman bank account she waved in front of me.
Pollard coughed and spit.
Miner, I gotta go.
McBride thinks the Mexican found something while cleaning your house. That's why you had them killed.
Buck sighed.
Like what?
Pictures?
Miner looked at Jack.
Of little girls?
The sound of the laughter was genuine, even traveling across 500 miles.
He might be the worst cop I've ever heard of.
Miner laughed along with Buck.
Yeah, he ain't all he was advertised to be, that's for sure. You'd think he'd be looking a little closer at the drug angle, but it's like he don't think drugs exist in Stillwater. I guess we've done our jobs then, huh?
What drug connection?
Miner was pretty far off script, but he didn't care. He had a point to make and the perfect ace to do it with.
Diego, the brother, or cousin or whatever. He ran him through the feds. I took the return call yesterday. McBride was out searching for a phantom prowler. Good job, by the way, keeping us running for the last 2 days. You can call off your cronies now. You've made your point.
I'll call them off when I'm good and ready. What did the Fed say?
It's what they didn't say. Guy doesn't exist. I think he's a CI working with the Feds.
They could hear the lap of water against Buck's boat, the sound of seagulls, a thump that was probably Buck closing the lid of a cooler.
How did you figure that out?
Am I right?
How did you figure it?
Miner shrugged, remembered Buck couldn't see him.
I'm not an idiot, Buck. Between you putting the hit on them and the big gaping hole of information about Vasquez, I just put two and two together. Am I right?
Not that I know of, though if he was, it explains some stuff. Far as I know, he's just a cartel man coming up to take over the area from our friends.
Jack clenched his fist in victory. Miner smiled at the expression of shock on Ann Newberry's face. Did he also detect a hint of grudging admiration?
Speaking of our friends, now that I'm running the protection, I've got more money to hide. I don't know what to do with all of it.
You're running it?
Come on, Buck.
Miner looked at Jack.
Did you think he would stop paying because you left? He still needs assurance SPD will turn a blind eye.
He? Who?
Miner laughed.
I ain't saying. Knowing you, you're recording this and will use it against me. We all know how good you are at that. So, you gonna tell me how to hide it? You always said no banks. I can't spend it all. I was thinking a storage facility. I don't have that much yet, but I will soon, especially if I play the Mexicans off our friends.
Anonymous donations are always good, but yeah, storage is best. Just keep it out of town. I'd go at least an hour away, maybe two. The seedier, the better. Pay cash and give a false name.
Jack was motioning for him to wrap it up while texting on his phone.
Good to know. Thanks. So what's the weather like down there?
Fishing gonna be good?
I hope so. You should come out with me sometime.
I'd love to, but I don't have the time now, especially since you're running us ragged.
I'll tell him to ease up a bit.
Thanks. Oh, and Buck, I've got a little something for you when you get back, as a thank you for all you've done over the years.
Well, that's mighty nice, Miner.
That's the least I can do. When will you be back?
I'll say Monday.
Same time and place?
See you then.
Miner punched the end button and handed the phone to Jack. Jack turned the recording app off and placed the phone in the cup holder between them. He didn't say anything for a long time.
Pretty gullible for a fancy Fed. Chances are he'll get me killed, Jack said.
Miner grinned.
I haven't had that much fun on the phone since I stopped calling the 1-900 numbers.
Jesus,
Ann said, laughing.
I'm not sure if I should be impressed with your acting abilities or worried about them, Jack said. Any idea who Buck was working for? The drug dealers?
My guess, Miner said. Joe Doyle.
Ann whistled in the back seat.
Who's Joe Doyle?
Driven past Stillwater Business Park out on Boondoggle,
Miner said.
Yeah?
That's Doyle, patriarch of the richest family in the county,
Ann offered.
Makes sense, though. He's got 2 or 3 businesses that are perfect fronts.
Miner, how did you know?
I suspected. I know you don't believe me.
Miner looked in the rearview mirror to include Ann in the comment.
But I wasn't directly involved in anything. I just looked the other way. Which is almost as bad, Sheriff, I know.
Jack stared out the car window. Miner could almost see the gears turning in his head. He turned back to Ann.
Think we have enough for a warrant for his house?
I'll make some calls first thing in the morning. If we get the right judge, we'll be searching his house by noon. Not Johnston,
Miner said. He cut his eyes to the rearview mirror.
Okay, Ann said.
Try to find one who won't advertise it all over the area, Jack said, if that's even possible. Also, keep the Doyles out of it. The name Doyle doesn't leave this car, understood? As soon as they know we're aware of them, they'll pull back like a startled turtle. Base it on the money. He has to have some handier than a storage facility an hour away.
Sorry I didn't pursue the molestation, Miner said. I figured that would throw up red flags.
You did the right thing, Miner. Excellent work, Sergeant.
Sergeant? Well, I ain't no sergeant.
You are now.
Chapter 8. Thursday. 1.
Why do you keep staring at my breasts?
Jack sat on the edge of Ellie's bathtub, his hands lightly resting on her bare hips, while she dabbed ointment on the stitched cut above his eye.
They're right in front of me.
Do you like them?
Very much.
Are you surprised?
Well, that you have breasts? Not really.
She rolled her eyes.
They were a present to myself. After I lost weight, my breasts looked like a National Geographic centerfold. I didn't want to look at those in the mirror for the rest of my life.
I'm sure your boyfriends have enjoyed them.
She picked up a Band-Aid and gently placed it over the wound.
I haven't had any complaints.
You were supposed to say I am the only one who's seen them.
Jack leaned forward and kissed her nipple.
Hmm.
She smoothed the ends of the Band-Aid and placed her hands on Jack's shoulders. He felt her heart racing, heard her breath shorten. His fingers slid between her legs.
Oh, don't start something you can't finish, McBride.
He looked up at her. Her smile was slight, playful, and sensual. To his surprise, he hardened quickly. It had been years since he had been able to go twice within so many hours. He couldn't remember the last time he wanted to.
Can we just stay in here and do this forever?
They stared at the ceiling, chests heaving, bodies covered in sweat. Jack turned to look at her. She was grinning,
Who wouldn't be after that? When she turned her head and looked at him, they both started laughing. Why are we laughing?
I have no idea, she replied. At the risk of making you even more cocky than you are.
I'm not cocky, she rolled her eyes.
Yes, you are.
He rolled onto his side, pillowed his head on his arm, and stared at Ellie while her breathing slowed. She looked at him from the corner of her eye, crooked an eyebrow, and turned her head to his.
What?
Thank you. She pursed her lips, but couldn't hide the smirk.
For what exactly?
Salvaging my day. She turned on her side and propped her head on her hand.
Want to talk about it?
Not particularly. She narrowed her eyes.
You aren't afraid I'll tell people, are you?
Oh, God, no. I don't want to think about it. I want to forget it.
Well, that's fine for now, but it won't be forever.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means I'm either part of your life or I'm not.
I'm too old for bullshit, Jack. For half-truths, lies, secrets. I don't want to be wondering what you're thinking. If I've somehow disappointed you, pissed you off, whatever.
Not that I expect us to sit around all the time talking about our feelings. We have to be able to talk things out, to listen to each other. Full disclosure.
Agreed.
He pulled her close. He'd forgotten how sensual kissing could be,
how it could be an act in and of itself, and more intimate as a result. How long into his marriage had it taken for a kiss to be either a quick, dismissive greeting or goodbye, or a gateway to sex? He couldn't remember kissing Julie this way, his body humming with contentment while in her arms. He pulled away reluctantly.
Okay. Full disclosure.
I didn't mean right now. She cupped his face. Can't we have a few days of ignorance?
No.
Okay. A few more minutes, then.
She kissed him lightly. He pulled back when she tried to deepen the kiss. Ellie, I have an appointment with Bob Underwood tomorrow.
Wait.
Jack looked over Ellie's shoulder at the clock. 2:48 a.m.
Yep, it's Thursday. Friday morning, I'm meeting Bob.
Her expression morphed from playful to serious in a blink.
You are?
I have no idea how long the process will take, but it starts tomorrow.
Jack smiled at her attempt to keep her expression neutral.
That is, unless you don't want me to get a divorce.
Don't be stupid.
Jack tickled her.
Then don't look so serious.
I feel bad rooting for the dissolution of any marriage, even yours.
Well, don't. I'm not only rooting for it, I'm thinking of organizing a pep rally.
She ran her hand down his hip and lifted an eyebrow suggestively.
What kind of pep rally?
Unfortunately, not that kind. In case you haven't noticed, I'm an old man.
We're the same age, and I'm not old.
Well, I don't have the stamina I did when I was younger.
And I'm in my prime.
I've noticed.
Ellie sighed dramatically.
Oh, I guess I'll have to channel all my pent-up energy into other avenues.
Like who?
She punched him in the stomach.
Not funny.
With a grunt, he flopped over onto his back. She nestled next to him and rested her head on his shoulder. She traced her fingers across his chest.
Did you hear about Charlie Williams?
The city councilman?
Yeah.
Is he going to make it?
It doesn't look good. Even if he does, he'll have to resign his position. His entire right side is paralyzed.
Jack ran his hand up and down Ellie's arm.
Whew, you've got some guns on you.
Push-ups. They're going to have a special election for his seat.
In November?
Yes.
Jack's hand stopped. He pulled his head back so he could see Ellie's face.
You want to run?
The corner of her mouth curled into a smile.
I was thinking about it.
Why wouldn't you?
The bookstore, the downtown development plan, the bank.
The bank?
Jane is sicker than she lets on, and I'm pretty sure she's leaving the bank in my hands when she dies.
Jesus. Really?
Yep.
It's a private bank?
Yeah, hard to believe.
I'm starting to feel inadequate.
Why?
What would a woman like you want with a disgraced FBI agent turned small-town police chief? I'm beginning to think you could do much better.
Disgraced FBI agent? What did you do?
How much to tell her? Until Julie left, he had led an uninteresting, average life. Career, family, friends, the occasional heart-pounding thrill of working in law enforcement. Even so, he could count on both hands the number of times he had pulled his gun on the job, and he had never shot it. His life had taken such a drastic nosedive, there were times he thought he was living in another world, one where he had no control, and no matter what he did, no matter what decision he made or path he took, it was wrong. He'd handled everything badly. He knew that as it was happening, and now. Stillwater was a new start, a chance to put it all behind him and, hopefully, never talk about it again. Ellie had been honest with him about her past. The least he could do was be honest with her. But there were some things it would be better for Ellie not to know, just as he was sure there were parts of her past she'd kept from him. When Ellie let the silence lengthen, he said, "About this time last year, I was working a case with the ATF. He looked at her. "Ever heard of the Sovereign Citizen Movement?
Vaguely.
Some of them are paper terrorists, filing claims against the government, wasting everyone's time. Others are more traditional anti-government libertarians with a violent bent." Jack returned his focus to the ceiling. "We had an agent undercover who finally got invited to meet with the heavy hitters. I was supposed to be her backup that night, along with an ATF agent. It was the day Julie left. I couldn't leave Ethan on his birthday. I made up some bullshit excuse, and the ATF agent said no problem, he'd handle it. It should have been a simple meet and greet, but it went south. Bad. The ATF agent was killed, and my agent was wounded."
Jack stared at the ceiling.
"I was put on desk duty, which I've always hated. That, along with my anger at Julie, led me to do some things I'd rather forget."
Ellie stroked his shoulder and down his arm. She intertwined her fingers with his and pulled their joined hands into her chest.
"Like what?"
He puffed out a laugh and rubbed his head.
"A neighbor of ours, a cop who Julie had been sleeping with, got suspicious when Julie didn't return his texts and calls. I deleted all the messages from her boyfriends. Probably a mistake, but I was so furious I wasn't thinking straight. The cop couldn't open an official investigation because the affair might come out and ruin his marriage. But he went to my boss, planted enough doubt to cause trouble. So I confronted him."
Jack turned to face Ellie. Her eyes met his steadily, and she waited.
"It was the first time I'd hit another man in 20 years. Not my finest hour. I felt awful about it until rumors started swirling I'd killed Julie in a moment of passion."
"Julie's lover said that?"
"I don't know. Probably."
"How did you explain it all to Ethan?"
"I found Julie. It was ridiculously easy when I set my mind to it. I thought, well, still do, that she left just to get me to chase her, to feed her ego, to pull me around like some dog on a leash."
"She wouldn't come home?"
Jack pushed a piece of hair behind Ellie's ear. "I didn't talk to her. I found her with some man in California. I paid a bellboy $100 to get a picture of her so I could text it to Ethan from Julie's phone."
"Her phone?"
"She left it when she bolted."
"What a bitch."
"Exactly. Discovering she was alive was enough to appease my boss, but my career hit a wall, started going downhill. I got passed over for promotions. I couldn't travel or work late because of Ethan. I was mulling what I was going to do next, thinking about finally using my law degree when I started working Valerie's case."
Ellie traced his lips with her finger. "Which you solved."
Jack nodded.
The official story is the suspect died in my custody. That was partially true. I was there, but I didn't kill him. My partner did. Alex is the best agent I've ever worked with, hands down. It would have been a huge loss to the agency if the truth of what happened came out, so I took the fall. Ellie stared at his chest, her eyes unfocused. Ellie? He asked. His heart pounded in his ears. It's too much, isn't it? She looked at him and smiled.
No, of course not. I'm glad you told me.
She kissed the hand she held.
I hope your partner appreciated your sacrifice.
She was the one who told me about this job. For a couple of days there, I thought maybe she had been trying to torture me. Then I met you.
Oh, stop being sappy.
Sorry. So that's it. My checkered past. Ellie kissed him.
Thanks for telling me.
You're welcome. He kissed her and felt much lighter than he had in months.
Enough about me. Back to the city council.
Are you asking my opinion? She looked troubled, as if wondering herself. I'm sure you'd be a great councilwoman. You seem to be good at everything you do.
I suck at relationships.
Well, so far, I have no complaints.
It's been 24 hours.
True. She punched him again.
Seriously, that hurts. Have you seen your biceps lately?
Back to you taking over the world. Selfishly, I want you to run.
Why?
Because then I would be assured of having one person on the city council to vote against firing me.
Nobody's going to fire you.
Would you blame them? I've had a pretty abysmal week.
Abysmal? She chuckled.
You like that word?
Yeah, I do. You'll prove yourself to them. I believe in you.
Oh, you do? Jack rolled over on top of Ellie, kissed her on the nose. I'm tired of talking.
You said earlier you were too old to do anything more.
That is not what I said.
I'm pretty sure it is.
What we have here, Jack said, moving down her body,
is a failure to communicate.
Oh,
she gasped. She closed her eyes and ran her fingers through his hair.
Nonverbal communication. I like it.
2. The novelty of school suspension wore off pretty quick. Uncle Eddie had left hours before to run errands. How it took 4 hours to buy hamburger meat at the one grocery store in town, Ethan had no idea. Daytime television sucked, and no one had updated Facebook or Instagram for hours. Ethan finally understood why his mother was always so eager to chat when he got home from school. He wished he had been a little more... Ethan pulled out his phone.
Google search thesaurus chatty, Ethan recited as he tapped on his phone. Loquacious, loquacious.
He blew air out between his lips.
I can't say it or spell it. Jesus, I'm talking to myself and searching for vocabulary words.
He tossed his phone aside and stared at the water stain on the ceiling. He picked up his phone and did another search. His dad was right. It was shaped like Maryland. His dad was right. God, he hated to admit that. It was so much easier to hate his dad when he was acting like a dick and treating Ethan like a 7-year-old. When he talked to Ethan like an adult and didn't go back on his word, it was much harder for Ethan to find something to be angry about. It was a weird sensation, agreeing with his dad. Ethan was sure it would be short-lived. He got his camera, his phone, and a Dr. Pepper and went to the front porch. He sat on the swing, listened to music, and took pictures of the empty house across the street. He wondered if it was haunted. It sure looked haunted. He was wondering if he could sneak over later and check the house out up close when he saw Olivia walking down the sidewalk. His stomach lurched. He hoped she would walk on by, though who she would be going to see on his street he didn't know. Then she stepped into his yard.
Dang it, she's coming here.
He removed his headphones and, through a dry mouth and with a tongue that had swelled like a sponge, he said,
Hey.
She stopped a few feet away. She shifted from foot to foot and shoved her hands into the pockets of her pink zip-up hoodie. Her hair was pulled back into a ponytail, except for one rebellious strand around her face that she pushed behind her ear.
Hey.
Ethan looked around at anything but Olivia. He realized this was the first time he had been alone with her, if you could call standing in the front yard alone.
School out?
Yeah.
Wow. Time flies when you're bored to death.
She was looking around at anything but Ethan. He relaxed a little.
I've been texting Troy all day. He lost his phone for a week.
Oh.
Ethan felt guilty that he didn't lose his phone, didn't get in trouble with his dad at all. Obviously, Troy did, even though he didn't do anything more than try to help Ethan.
My dad made him go to work with him.
Probably better than sitting around all day.
I wouldn't count on it,
she mumbled. He would have given anything for Troy to be there, cracking a joke, keeping the conversation going. He and Olivia had nothing to say to each other, a realization that made the butterflies in his stomach shrivel up and die.
Want a Dr. Pepper?
Ethan asked.
Sure.
He opened the front door. He thought of how proud his mom would be of him right now. First, asking if his guest wanted something to drink, and then holding the door open. Olivia stopped at the top of the steps.
Is anyone home?
She asked.
No, Dad's at work and Uncle Eddie is...
oh, somewhere. She looked up and down the empty street.
I better stay out here.
Why? She gave him the same look she did the first time they met.
I can't be inside alone with you.
Ethan laughed, not at her, but at the idea he would have the courage to do anything inappropriate.
Whatever,
he said, and went inside. He caught a glimpse of himself in the bathroom mirror as he walked by. His hair was sticking up in the back, just as it did every morning when he woke up, reminding him he didn't take a shower that morning. He wet his hand and tried to press his hair down with little success. He lifted his arm and took a whiff.
Not too bad, but not great.
He would be sure to stand far enough away that it wouldn't matter. Why did she come over? Ethan wondered. It was probably to bring him homework, he supposed. He paused as he grabbed the last Dr. Pepper out of the refrigerator.
She didn't have a backpack.
Anyway, there was no point in doing homework. Dr. Corsi had said he would get zeros on everything. He stood up abruptly, hitting his head on the refrigerator.
Ow!
The palm of his empty hand started to sweat. He didn't want to go back outside. There were only two reasons why Olivia walked across town to see him, both of them equally terrifying. Either she liked him, or she was here to grill him about his fight with Kevin. He was pretty sure she didn't like him, which left Kevin. Did she find out what the fight was about? Surely not. It would only make Kevin look bad. Chances were better Kevin spent the day trashing Ethan and making it seem Ethan jumped him for no reason at all. Considering how his last year had gone, Ethan didn't hold out much hope for Olivia's visit having a positive outcome. When he saw her standing on the porch, arms across her chest, he knew what was coming. He shouldn't have left her alone. It had given her time to work herself up to fight with him. He held out the Dr. Pepper.
Here you go.
She ignored it.
What did you fight with Kevin about?
His shoulders slumped. He set the Dr. Pepper on the porch railing, shoved his hands into his pockets, and looked down at the ground.
Maybe she'll go away if I don't answer, he thought. I asked Troy and he wouldn't say.
He doesn't know.
Oh, he just jumped in because you're best friends.
Ethan felt a flare of happiness.
Did Troy think they were best friends?
He hoped so, but he wasn't sure after the fight. Troy hadn't replied to any of his texts, though if he lost his phone and was working with his dad, Ethan understood why. "You'll have to ask Troy why he jumped in."
"He won't tell me."
Ethan shrugged.
"I don't know what to tell you."
"Why did you fight with Kevin? Was it about me?"
"Why would we fight about you?" Olivia flinched, as if he had slapped her. Then she got mad.
"God, you're such an asshole."
She walked down the porch stairs and turned.
"FYI, Kevin is telling everyone you jumped him because you're jealous of him dating me. You might want to set things right with your girlfriend before you go back to school."
Scorn dripped from every word.
"I don't have a girlfriend."
"Mitra will be surprised to hear that. She likes Troy, you idiot."
Olivia paused, surprised.
"How do you know that? Did she tell you?"
"No,"
Ethan said slowly.
"I notice things. More than anyone else around here, that's for damn sure."
"Language, Ethan,"
Olivia said. They stared at each other, both trying not to laugh. He held out the Dr. Pepper.
"Here,"
he said. She stepped up the stairs and took it.
"Thanks."
They sat on the top step, as far away from each other as possible. She popped the can open with a hiss and took a drink.
"I didn't mean to be an asshole," Ethan said.
She shrugged.
"I'm used to it."
When she looked at him, the sliver of hair fell from behind her ear.
"Where's your drink?"
Ethan picked up his empty can and shook it.
"That's the last one."
"Oh, I'm sorry. Here."
She held the can out.
"I don't want to take your last one."
"It's okay. I've had four already today."
"Have you drunk any water at all?"
"No, Mom, I haven't."
"You are the unhealthiest guy I know."
She took another drink, then held out the can again.
"Want to share?"
"Sure."
He took a sip and set the can on the porch between them.
"You aren't going to tell me why you fought Kevin, are you?"
"Nope."
They stared at the street in silence.
"I didn't believe Kevin, you know, when he said you were jealous."
"Well, that's good,"
Ethan said, both relieved and saddened.
"I figured it was about your dad,"
she said,
"since Buck Pollard is Kevin's uncle."
"It was,"
Ethan said. He might as well grasp onto the lie, since everyone assumed it anyway. Maybe it would keep Olivia from quizzing him.
"About my dad."
"Oh,"
she said.
"Why wouldn't you tell me then?"
Ethan shrugged.
"Because it was a stupid thing to fight over."
"You were afraid I would think you were stupid?"
"Pretty much."
"But I already think that,"
she said, a wry smile tugging at her mouth.
"Ha ha,"
Ethan said. They shared their drink in silence. Ethan hoped it was the end of that conversation and wanted to talk about something else, anything to keep her here for a little longer, but he had no idea what to say. Ethan pointed to the house across the street.
"You think that house is haunted?"
Ethan asked.
"There's no such thing as ghosts."
"Yes, there is."
"Have you seen one?"
"No."
She spread her hands as if that explained it all.
"Have you ever seen God or Jesus?" Ethan asked.
"No."
Ethan spread his hands.
"That's not even close to the same thing," she said.
Ethan didn't reply. He didn't care enough about the subject to argue about it. He was completely out of conversation ideas.
"I guess Kevin said that about you being jealous to embarrass you,"
Olivia said.
Boy, she wasn't going to let it go. "I guess. Who knows what goes on in that black hole he calls a brain."
"I mean, why else would he say it?"
"Can we please stop talking about it?"
Ethan said.
"Fine."
"Good. What happened at school today that didn't involve Kevin Jackson?"
Olivia was deep into a rambling explanation of every word every teacher said when an old red sports car pulled up in front of the house. A petite woman with long, sandy blonde hair pulled back into a ponytail and aviator sunglasses stepped out of the car and looked up and down the street. Spotting Ethan and Olivia, she closed the door and walked around her car. She wore fitted dark jeans, tucked into knee-high black leather boots. Her short navy blazer covered a low-cut white T-shirt. Her high-heeled boots clicked on the sidewalk as she sauntered toward them.
"Who is that?"
Olivia said, a trace of awe in her voice. Ethan couldn't talk. He could barely breathe. But he could smile. 3. It took all morning to get the warrant for Buck Pollard's house. When the skeleton crew of Miner, Ann, Jack, and two deputies Ann trusted to keep their mouths shut executed the warrant, it was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. By 3 o'clock, they were almost finished searching the small house with no luck. The two deputies had moved on to the barn. Jack walked down the hall. Ann sat at a desk, rifling through files. An old desktop computer like the one at the station sat to her right, monitor on, asking for a password. "Probably bought an extra through the city and brought it home," Jack thought. "Find anything?"
"No, but we'll box it all up anyway."
A deputy, Ann's young assistant, whose name Jack couldn't remember, poked his head in the door.
"Does the warrant include a storm cellar?"
Ann's shoulders slumped.
"No."
Miner walked in the room.
"Why didn't you tell us he had a storm cellar?"
Ann accused. Miner was taken aback.
"I didn't know. It ain't like we socialized."
Ann stood and pulled her phone out of her pocket.
"I'll have the warrant amended."
"The cellar, it's locked," the deputy said.
"Must mean there's something good down there."
She left the room, phone to her ear. Miner followed her toward the kitchen. Jack sat at the desk and pulled the keyboard forward.
"Bet he liberated you from the station," Jack said.
He punched in the username and password Susan gave him on the first day. The screen went blue and then program icons popped up.
"Crook."
He browsed Pollard's computer. It was boring stuff. A tax software program, Microsoft Office, email, Internet Explorer. He went into the files, noting there were only a few. Jack wondered why Pollard bothered having a computer at all. He clicked on the pictures folder, sure it would come up just as empty. There was no way Pollard was stupid enough to keep